It's 106 Central Time, and you are tuned to the Afternoon Magazine here on AM 580. I'm Jason Croft, in for Celeste Quinn. Well, it's the fourth Friday of the month, and it's time for us to do our regular Law and You program. Today's topic deals with a part of law and life I know we all deal with pretty much all the time, and it's driving. This program was actually brought to our attention and suggested to us by several listeners, who were concerned about what's going on today, drivers today, and the state of driving today. So today's program is going to be about driving law, the rules of road, and basically how you can become a better driver. Joining us today, we have two guests. We have Gary Magwood. He is a driving educator and freelance writer. Some of his articles are going to be found online at www.drivers.com. Also joining us is Sergeant Bill Emery. He's the Safety Education Officer with the Illinois State Police. They're here to talk to us about being more aware of other drivers on the road and about being more aware of our own driving behaviors. Of course, your questions and comments about driving and the state of drivers on the roads are welcome. In Champaign-Urbana, call 333-9455. Outside our listening area, you can call toll-free 1-800-222-9455, 333-WILL. And 1-800-222-WILL. Gary Magwood, good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi there. And Sergeant Bill Emery, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So,
hi, Sergeant. How are you doing?
Just fine, sir. And yourself?
Good, good. Excellent.
So let's start with this question. This is for the both of you. What would you consider to be the number one thing people are doing wrong on the road, or the number one thing that we need to work on as drivers?
Bill, you want to start?
Sure, why not? What I find as a police officer on the road, the number one causes of violations and crashes is speed, speeding over the posted speed limit or speeding too fast for conditions.
And Gary?
Well, I'm going to backtrack a little tiny bit and go to what I see as a core problem, and that is when you look at the process we go through to get a driver's license. It makes you realize, if you really look at it carefully, that we really know very little about the process of driving. And what happens is we get our license and get caught in an emergency or a crisis and have absolutely no idea how to bail ourselves out, because the process of getting a license, to a large extent, is pretty much in North America, the business of, you know, driving around a block and of course, the dreaded parallel parking that concerns everybody. But we really don't know a lot about the process, and I can only tell you that from my own experience of training and teaching, I don't know, well over 18,000 people on skid pads now, that the whole business of how to brake in an emergency, how to use your vision to bail yourself out, even though you may be exceeding the posted speed limit or whatever, but the majority of us actually crash at or below the established speed limits. It's really not knowing what to do in an emergency, and we all find ourselves in a crisis, or we find ourselves having to deal with somebody else's crisis.
So you feel that the
compounding it.
So you feel that driver's ed programs are kind of failing us as drivers.
Well, yeah, and if you look at the stats really carefully, stats are always, you've got to be so careful with the stat business, but statistics are, to a large extent, and I'm sure Bill will back it up when they do crash reconstruction, most of the crashes are you and I making mistakes behind the wheel or compounding somebody else's mistake, and not knowing how to deal with those crises. We're confronted with them for the first time, and the inevitable crash happens, and then we look at all the other components, whether the car was safe or the conditions of the highway or whether they were talking on a cell phone or whatever it happens to be. But by and large, the activity in our lives at which we are at most risk, driving, is the one we know least amount about.
Do you agree with that, Bill?
Definitely, I do agree. I'm not saying that the driver's ed classes are not teaching them the things that they need. I'm sure that they're teaching them the very basics. It's the responsibility of the parents, the adult, to assist them in the driving part of it. I believe it's only 6 hours behind the wheel that driver's ed teachers have with them, and that's just due to not having enough time. So, yes, definitely, there is more time needed for each student, but unfortunately, the driver's ed teachers aren't able to do it. And I've talked with many driver's ed teachers, and they are saying the same thing. Yes, we're doing all we can, except we just don't have the time available.
And the sad part is that we as parents have got to a stage where what we want is to get the kids licensed, because we're kind of tired of schlepping them to the basketball games and to the, you know, to the various and sundry activities, and we don't give the driving skills, the driving process, it's a complex process, and we don't treat it as being something that takes a long time to learn. And if you think you're going to teach a 16 or a 17 year old to drive at that age, you're already dealing with what they've learned from the time they've been however big, sitting in their child seat watching mom or dad drive. And by the time you get them at 16 or 17, in most cases, the driving instructor, their priority and their mandate from either a state or provincial jurisdiction is to get them to pass a test, not learn how to drive. And the driving instructors, to a large extent, are very frustrated by that. But that's all we as parents or as a society expect them to do.
Well, I know this is true because I have known some teen drivers who get their license, and within a week or 2 weeks, they've had a fender bender. They've had some sort of accident.
Okay.
So what steps should we be taking then, you know, detailed steps if you want to get that far, about making this a safer process for teens? And then my next question will be, for those of us who are many years beyond our teens, you know, where do we go from there? What's our steps now to become better drivers? So why don't we start with the teen issue? Do you want to start, Bill?
Sure. How can we make teens a better driver?
Better drivers, you know, supplementing drivers, driver's ed programs, and, you know, maybe changing driver's ed, the way we think about that sort of program.
Well, what I feel what they're doing right now is again, it's the very basics. If we can have, I know with my children, I'll just speak personally here, before my child started driver's ed, I would take them out in the country and or a parking lot and teach them, again, the very basics so that they'll have an idea so that they can just build on whatever the driver's ed would teach them. Also, just as Gary was saying, it takes a little bit more time and effort to actually know how to drive. We who are older are not that we're experienced, but we know more because we've experienced more. These young people have no experience to fall back on. So many times when there is something ahead of them, rather than just hitting the brake slowly and start to brake slowly, it's all of a sudden I have to hit the brake, make a right or left turn, and which causes either a rollover or a collision, rear-end collision. What does it take? I would be a very wealthy man if I could give you that answer. But I can say that just experience, practice, practice, and more practice. It's just like mathematics. You don't just get 8 hours of mathematics and
be able to do algebra.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So how can we expect our children to have 6 hours or even a semester and be able to be actually very good drivers?
And, so. And Bill's quite right. A lot of what I've learned over the last few years of doing the type of training that I do, and by the way, Bill, I do work with quite a few police forces here in Canada, both the RCMP and people in their driver training programs.
Outstanding.
Is the neat part of what we've discovered with this vision thing is teaching folks how to use their eyes. And here's a scenario for you. We've got two genetic codings that we have to overcome. One is the fact that we are a low-aim vision species. So, Jason, if you're walking down the sidewalk, mm-hmm. you're maintaining about a 15 to 20 meter or yard radius of vision around you.
Right.
And it doesn't matter if you're running jogging or if you're running through a park or anything. That's the kind of vision radius we keep around us. Now you climb behind the wheel of a car. Now, keep in mind, we've been genetically coded to maintain that low-aim vision because that's all we ever need for the type of speeds that we travel and the type of terrain. Now you climb behind the wheel of a car that's going to do 65, 70 miles an hour, and we're still maintaining that 15 to 20-yard radius of vision around us. So low-aim vision right off the bat, as Bill will attest, if you can't see it happening, you can't deal with it. When you look up, now it's crisis mode. So teaching people to look up and look high is a really important step. It's hard to do. It doesn't come naturally.
Well, I also saw...
It's not a natural function, but then neither is driving a car. So right off the bat, vision.
Well, I saw in one of your articles something that ties along to that, the idea of looking while you're braking.
Absolutely.
So why don't you explain that concept?
I will, and Bill will appreciate this because I know the type of training that he's probably gone through. Here's how the eyes work. So you've got your initial genetic coding of being a low-aim vision species. That's what we are. So the second thing is, our second genetic coding that makes it difficult and one of the things we have to overcome driving is the fight or flight coding that we have. Jason, if you and I were sitting yakking in a bar or something, we got angry with each other and we're having an argument, we would not take our eyes off each other, okay, because we'd be the fight or flight thing is either I'd look at you and say, geez, you're a lot bigger than I am, I'm out of here, flight, or if I'm going to fight you, I'm not going to take my eyes off you because you're going to broadcast your next move. In a vehicle, we cannot look at the hazard. So we have to be able to identify the hazard and then look away from it. So when you apply the brakes, if you are staring at the back of that transport that stopped on the multi-lane highway, the only message your poor right foot can get from your brain is to apply more pressure as the back of that truck comes towards your face. The only thing you can do is apply more pressure to the brakes. Now the brakes are already locked up. Even if you've got an anti-lock brake system, it doesn't matter. If you're staring at that object you so desperately don't want to hit, you're going to hit it. What we teach and what we've learned is this whole business of unlocking the eyes. And the moment you unlock your eyes and look away from the back of that truck, look away from that pedestrian that stepped off the sidewalk, look away from the car that's gone through the intersection, and look for an opening, look for a space, you will automatically, and here's the magic, you will automatically modulate pressure on the brake pedal, and you will automatically steer in the direction you're looking. Now, that doesn't get taught. And it is a taught skill. It's not something you will learn just by doing. You need to go through the process of seeing how the eyes work, realizing how they work, and actually experiencing it. And then next time you're confronted by it, you squeeze the brake, and boy, next thing you know, you're looking for a way out, and you will, in most cases, modulate the pressure on the pedal, and you will steer in the direction you want to go. Bill will attest to this. If you go to a wrecking yard, Bill, how many rows of cars are there with a great big V in the middle of the hood? Right? They hit a lamppost or a telephone pole.
That's true.
Well, where were they looking? They were staring at that object. And as long as you're staring at it, you cannot change the direction of the vehicle. So the vision training component is pretty much key, but it is a taught skill, and that is something that is definitely not taught as part of getting a license.
Today we're talking with Gary Magwood. He's a driving educator and freelance writer, and also in the studio with us is Sergeant Bill Emery, a safety education officer with the Illinois State Police. We have somebody on the phone who would like to talk with us, and the caller is from Aurora on line 4. Good afternoon.
Yeah, hi, good afternoon. I have two things I wanted to discuss and one thing I would like you to discuss. I wanted to say that I had a slight accident, which turned out to be a good accident because I had to go to the classes that you go to when you have an accident?
Defensive driving course class?
Yeah, and I was so glad I went because one of the questions I asked was, I always drive with a wheelchair in my car. And the teacher then told me, after I'd been doing it for about 7 years, to make sure I put the seatbelt on the wheelchair, and I thought, what a good idea! I wish I would have been doing it all these years. And I think anybody that has a large object in their car ought to put the seatbelt around it and drive that way.
Absolutely.
But you know, as you have been saying, it wasn't taught, but I learned it at the courses. I wish those courses weren't so difficult to get into. They are hard to get into. You can't always find one that's open when you can make it.
Well, you know what you can do?
What?
I teach defensive driving. I teach the 4, 6, and 8 hour. And what you can do is many banks will support that or sponsor that. And by getting a bank or an organization, it costs for the state police approximately just for books. Our time is nothing. It's free. So anyone who is interested in taking a defensive driving course class can contact any Illinois State Police headquarters and ask for the safety education officer because, as I said, we teach those probably at least every 3 months, if not every 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great opportunity for those that may have some problems in the past and so may have to go through, or those that just want a little refresher on the importance of driving. And you do make a good point about putting your seatbelt on heavy objects. What I try and tell people is don't put anything in your vehicle that you wouldn't throw in your face or in your child's face.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if that would be a wheelchair, well, then we have other problems. But find something that's soft. Anything that is heavy will be used as a missile once you're involved in a collision.
And I can't put it in the trunk because it's too heavy to lift up and over. I can't put it in the trunk. If anybody says, well, why doesn't she put it in the trunk? I can't.
Well, you did the next best thing, yes.
Yeah, it's really the best thing. The other thing, I guess I have two things I wanted you to discuss. When my children took driver's ed, they said they had a real tough teacher. He showed them the goriest pictures he could about accidents, and they learned well from those pictures.
Those famous driver ed films.
Yeah. Then the other thing I just wanted to say, what do you say, and I'll hang up and you can give me the answer, what do you say to a grandson who's kind of angry at his mom because his mom put him on, he couldn't drive for a week because he disobeyed her. And he's talking to me about it, and he says to me, you know, my mother really can't drive. And I'm standing there, and I'm thinking, your mother drove for about 20 years, and you're telling me she can't drive? You know, and I knew it was just his anger. And I never did answer him, but that has always kind of annoyed me that I, you know, because I didn't want to lash out in anger at him. Because I knew he was just being a 17-year-old, you know, a typical, you know, angry because he was grounded because he disobeyed her. And so what do you say to a 17-year-old that says, my mother can't drive very well? I know it. You laugh at it, but, you know, the only thing I thought of, and it was 2 days later, I thought of, you know, you'll be like Mark Twain, said, when you're 24, you'll find out how much your mother has learned.
Well, Gary, do you want to tackle that?
Yeah, I would love to, because one of the great adventures for me was a program that I did right across Canada called the Labatt Road Scholarship, and actually I talked to something like 40,000 17 to 19-year-olds on university and community college campuses about the driving issue. One of the things I learned, and something that we sort of need to weave into the whole process of getting a license. Getting a driver's license today for a teenager, by and large, is the major rite of passage. It exceeds, and I'm going to use the term I use with the kids all the time, it is more important than losing their virginity or taking their first drink, really. The business of getting a driver's license is a major transition to adulthood. It says you're an adult once you've got that driver's license. The sad part is, and Bill will probably attest to this, it also is one of the largest areas for a conflict in a family.
Definitely.
As a kid reaches driving age, there's this constant thing of conflict, just like this young man and his mom right now, and the driving thing gets used as a, you know, as a carrot and a stick and all those things. And it's very frustrating because what happens is mom and dad, again, really obviously don't want their kids to get hurt in a car crash or anything like that, but when they send Fred or, you know, Sally off to driver's ed, their primary concern is to get their license as quickly and as inexpensively as possible. Without realizing that by doing that, what they are doing is shortchanging that young person's ability to deal with an emergency or crisis and not get into a conflict either on the highway or at home. So it becomes a bit of a circle; it just keeps going round and round. But it is the major transition into adulthood, and the kids have told me time and time again they would put more time and effort into the acquisition of a license if that is what was asked of them.
Well, I thank that caller from Aurora for her call. More calls are welcome. The numbers again, 333-9455. And outside our Champaign Urbana area, you can call toll-free 1-800-222-9455, 333-WILL, and 1-800-222-WILL. Well, Bill, earlier you talked about that you teach a defensive driving course. What are the sort of the principles that you teach in that course that you think would help the listeners today to become better drivers?
Well, as Gary was saying, we teach primarily, or I teach primarily, just the very basics. Many people have a lot of questions that are not actually answered once they get on behind the wheel, and that's what's gotten them in trouble because of the very minor things that are very important. But at the time, when they were first getting their driver's license, they just want to get their driver's license. They just want to get through. They want to get on the road.
Exactly right.
And so there are a lot of questions that they're not even aware of. Again, that's inexperience. But then again, I teach a lot for the seniors also. And the question is, well, why do seniors have to take the course? Once again, even though we're very experienced as a senior, there are some things that over time you have truly just forgotten. And again, that's why many of the senior centers would call me just as a refresher and also to assist with the insurance too.
Well, that's another big issue too. You have teen drivers on one end, and then you have older drivers on the other end. And
it's exact. Let me tell you, I told you about working with the kids, of course, and as a result of that, have done many presentations to seniors groups. And I always walk in, Jason, and say, you know, you now may I call you seniors? Yeah, well, not a problem. You, it's quite interesting that when I talk to seniors like yourselves, you your first response is, oh, those darn kids, you know, it's the kids this, the kids that, and the kids are lousy drivers. You know, when I go talk to the younger crowd, and quite often their response will be, well, it's those darn seniors out there, you know, those old people, they can't drive, and da-da-da. It's amazing that that the two ages think that either one of them are the world's worst drivers, and I always say, well, I have a bulletin for you. My generation in between thinks you're both the lousiest drivers. So it's we're always looking. We look at age, and we keep looking at so many different things as to what actually creates a situation for us to get into a crisis behind the wheel, and to a large extent it's because we didn't learn how not to get into that crisis in the first place by teaching vision skills, by teaching some emergency techniques, and once we're into that crisis, having no idea how to bail ourselves out because it's the first time it's happened to us, and even though maybe a minor crash and we survive it, we never go through a process to find out how we got into that crash in the first place and what we may have been able to do or not do to either reduce the severity of it or to eliminate the crash completely. You know, you can have folks, and Bill will probably attest to this. I mean, there's drivers out there who have crashed 3, 4, 5, 6 times. We never go back and say, hey, what's the problem here? You know, what is it that you are doing or not doing that gets you into these scrapes constantly?
What I'm trying to teach now is in defensive driving courses, use the what if scenario. As you're driving, what if a car should run a red light? What if? And once knowing that, understanding what you can do before it happens will, on every instance just about, will prevent you from either taking that ditch. You'll already know what to do.
Yeah, that's a valid point. But again, it's you know, telling them and doing a class is one thing, but the actual hands-on experience of doing it really, really, I'll use the term, drives the message home. And that has sort of what I've been doing over the years is actually doing hands-on work right on a skid pad. And we've actually built you like this. We've developed a plastic rollout highway up here that we can lay down in a parking lot any time of the year and literally turn it into glare ice. It's a 180-foot-long strip of high-density polyethylene, looks like glare ice, and we can teach sort of winter driving techniques all year round. And it's fascinating to watch people get into the first time they ever lock the brakes up or get the car turning sideways a tiny bit, what processes they go through. And at the end of 4 hours, it's amazing the transformation. And it doesn't seem to matter whether they're 17 or 86, and that's been the age range that I've had on skid pads over the years. It's amazing. Once we teach folks how to use their eyes and how to get their vision up, which, again, I'll reiterate, takes practice. You've got to constantly remind yourself to look up and look high. But once you also realize how this eye lock thing works, going back to what Bill said, now that person goes through the intersection, you know that you've got to look away from that hazard and not look at that thing that is threatening you. And that'll make the big difference as to how much pressure you put on the brakes and the amount of steering that you need to bail yourself out. And not always are you going to completely eliminate the crash, but you stand a good chance of minimizing the crash.
Well, we have a couple more callers lined up. Real quick, need to get some weather out of the way. The Storm Prediction Center has issued a tornado watch for portions of southeastern Illinois and southern Indiana, effective this afternoon until 4 o'clock. And in the immediate AM580 severe weather coverage area, the tornado watch includes the following counties in Illinois, Cumberland, and Clark. And again, that watch goes until 4 o'clock. Joining us this afternoon, we are talking about driving and how you can become a better driver. Our two guests are Gary Magwood. He's a driving educator and a freelance writer. And Sergeant Bill Emery. He's a safety education officer with the Illinois State Police. We move on now to line one on a cell phone. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. First, my bona fides. I am a tractor-trailer truck driver of 20-plus years and going on a couple million miles. There's two items that are enforcement items I would like your guests to talk about, that are things that I've seen in the last few years that are increasing exponentially and just getting worse, and I don't see the police trying to do, if they can do anything about it at all. One is the sort of cavalier attitude toward the posted speed limits, which, especially amongst trucks, annoys, and I'm a truck driver, and it annoys me no end to see these rigs blasting along at 70 miles an hour plus and in a very cavalier fashion. And the other is, and is, from my point of view, is I think even worse, and, you know, to use the saying, if I had a nickel, well, I'd be retired, for the number of times I now see people in a, you know, wandering all over the road, speeding up, slowing down, so on and so forth. Why? Because they got the damn cell phone stuck in one ear. They're leaning over, you know, or whatever, and obviously distracted, yakking to somebody about God knows what, probably, you know, something of no consequence whatsoever.
My first question, are you parked?
That was exactly what I was going to ask.
I am stopped. Yes, I am perfectly stationary, and I have my hands free, headphone on, too, so there. I'm telling you, every trip I take, I see 20, 30 people with the damn phone craned over. The typical one is the guy in the pickup truck craned over on one side. He's got the cell phone propped between his shoulder and his ear, and he's got got his left hand on the steering wheel and completely oblivious to everything else in the world going on around him. And I'd like you two to discuss that, please. Thank you.
Go for it, Bill.
Most definitely. Well, thank you for the statement, sir. Now, in reference to the truck and the posted speed limit, many people have the same complaint that what are the police doing allowing these truckers, 80,000 pounds, go speeding by and stopping us cars? And then we have the reverse, too. But in most semis, there are CBs. They communicate back and forth. They warn one another that there is a state police officer up the road. So by the time that we see or get into the area, we are seeing the truckers going the posted speed limit.
Right?
Smiling, waving at us, but they fail to know that we're also on, we have CBs also, so we're hearing all that's going on too. So, unfortunately, we try to get as many as we can, as we do with not just truckers, but all that are violating the posted speed limit or violating the law. References the cell phones. Cell phones are one of the greatest inventions that are ever made. The problem is they're such a distraction that they do, in my opinion, cause crashes or collisions. Now, how do we prove that? Now, that's where it comes in. If I were to come to a collision and I would see a cell phone, my question would be, were you talking on the phone? many people wouldn't say, oh, yes, that's a reason why I was involved in this collision, because I was being distracted by talking on the phone. No, you don't get that. The thing with the law now is the law really hasn't changed about distractions. It has amended that you can use the hands-free now device and drive. You do, though, unfortunately, if you're like me, if I'm on the phone, much of my attention, I'll say a majority of it, is on that conversation. And if it's a heated conversation, more of my concentration focus will be on that telephone call rather than driving. And as we all know, it takes not only just 100%, but 150% of our concentration focus to drive.
And there are, Bill, there's the cell phone thing. I see somebody going down the road and they're talking to their sun visor, hands-free. And as you say, they are being distracted. But think about, even drinking a coffee. I mean, you've just stopped for your $1.50 Starbucks, and this thing is boiling hot, and you've just popped the lid on, and you're balancing it with one hand, rocking down the road, and you take a sip, and a bit of it spills down the front, and you look down to see where that went, or if you think about even smoking in a car, lighting a cigarette, your attention is taken away. Eating while you're driving. I mean, it just goes on and on. Fiddling with the radio, with the sound system, fiddling with the air conditioning heating system in the car. I mean, every one of them are diversions and distractions. The sad part is that when we come back to reality, in other words, we're yakking on the cell phone, or we've been fiddling with the heater controls, or whatever the distraction happened to be, and now we look up and we go back to the transport that stopped in front of us, we still don't have any process to deal with that emergency. And although we've got ourselves into it, and hey, yes, we should be reprimanded for it, it's a pity that we just don't learn how to deal with the crisis so that at least we can bail ourselves out and not crash, even though we are the ones being distracted. It seems a pity that we're taking the approach that, in various jurisdictions in North America, ban cell phones. That's not going to help. You might as well, what are you going to do, start banning smoking in the car, eating a hamburger, talking to your passengers? It just goes on and on. It's the realization that everything that you do that is a distraction is going to create a situation where your brain is going to come back to the focus of driving, and it's going to be too late, because that's when the person stepped out in front of you, or the vehicle's gone through the intersection, whatever it happens to be. Now we don't have a process to deal with that part of it either. So it's a cycle. It's a circle that just keeps going round and round.
But you do get a lot of states who are trying to regulate as particular cell phones, New York being one of them. Illinois, what is Illinois doing about? Is it hands-free now?
Right. Illinois has amended the law, stating that, and that falls underneath the distraction, that if a person chooses to use a hands-free, then that is acceptable. That, even though the concentration is not fully there, at least they can put both hands on the wheel.
Yeah,
and I know, Gary, you're saying that isn't the absolute solution we should be looking at, but it's the one that I think a lot of legislators.
The frustrating part for the bills of this world is the fact that they keep getting asked to go after motors for more and more things, and I mean I don't, you'd have to put so many police on the road to really make a ban on handheld or handheld cell phones. I mean, already, the police have to deal with the speed issue, with so many other things. Now you got to. I don't think you could ever enforce a law enough to make it to have it any impact at all in terms of reducing the number of times that people will use a cell phone or a handheld cell phone. It's asking the police to do an awful lot. with the resources that they have of dealing with the truckers and dealing with the sheer density of traffic and the issue, and we haven't even talked about that, but what is commonly called road rage, people getting angry at each other, people getting frustrated, sitting in traffic jams. It makes for a very unpleasant driving environment. And I think asking the police to do more and more and more things that are of a reprimand nature is asking a lot of the police, the expectation is far in excess of what I think they can do.
Now, there is in northern Illinois some ordinances, city ordinances, that ban driving and talking on a cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how they're accomplishing it or is it working, I can't answer that question, but there are local ordinances in certain towns in Illinois that have that.
Now, here's something that I suggested in a column not too long ago. The enforcement part of the cell phone issue is very tough, but if somebody's involved in a crash bill, and with modern technology, of course, we can tell if they were talking on the phone. All right. So, in other words, you can track the fact that they were yakking on the phone when at the time of the crash. Maybe there should be a charge, that like a careless driving charge or you know something like that, that is brought to bear on somebody who actually crashed while using a cell phone, and so that the consequences of a crash as a result of being on the cell phone are far more severe than if you crashed because you just kind of messed up. Does that sound like a feasible idea?
Comments, Bill?
Does it sound feasible? Yes. And is it possible? Yes. As you said, there is already a law in effect, and that is a distraction. If a person is distracted and is involved in a collision or crash, it's a fine, a chargeable fine. So is it possible? The problem comes in now is the follow-up. Do we follow up that far? Let's say that up in Chicago, area of Chicago where there's collisions all the time, and our troopers up in that area are handling 5 or 6 collisions. Do they have the time to follow up on each one of those crashes where there's a cell phone? Will that probably happen? Probably not. Is it possible if the collision was bad enough, and what I mean by bad enough, if it's the injury bad enough where we could, or fatality, more than likely, yes. Yeah. We should and will.
I see, yeah. Yeah. It's a tough one. I mean, the we don't give driving its due. We treat it with disdain. We treat it as a relatively simple task. And I say to the kids all the time, heck, it can't be that complicated. Your parents can do it, you know. And we don't give it its due. It is a complex task. However, we're very capable of learning complex tasks. Watch a kid on a balance beam. Watch a figure skater. Watch a kid playing hockey. Thousands of skills that we can learn that are of a very complex nature, but we don't give driving its due in that respect. And the result is that yakking on a cell phone to the majority of drivers is, hey, this is no big deal. I can do both these things. Well, the reality is you can't. It'd be like trying to talk on a cell phone while you're doing a triple Lutz or something on the ice. It's the fact that driving, as Bill said, 150% of your attention. We can't always have that attention because, as Bill would appreciate, you know, you get off into hyperspace, even just internal mental processes. I mean, you get off, you're thinking about the job, you've got to get home, you've got to do the shopping thing, I've got to get the kids to, you know, to the basketball game, I've got this to deal with, that to deal with. Well, even the internal mental processes are a distraction from driving. So it's really hard to turn around and legislate against a cell phone. What are you going to do? Start legislating against mental aberration? It's really hard. It's a very, very difficult topic, and it's something that we've just kind of let evolve and develop over the last, well, I guess about 100 years. And we've watched the density of traffic change. We've watched the technology in the cars and highways change. We've watched tremendous changes in the past 25 or 30 years. But we're still teaching techniques and processes that were developed in the 1940s and 50s. And they're just out of touch, and they don't work.
Well, we have about another 10 minutes left in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. We're talking with Gary Magwood, a drive-in educator and freelance writer, and also Sergeant Bill Emery, safety educator, education officer for the Illinois State Police. And we have a couple of callers on waiting for us right now. Let's go to line number 1 in Champaign. Good afternoon.
Hi, I just wanted one of the guests to clarify something he said. He said that there was a law amended in Illinois that stated that it was okay to use a cell phone hands-free in the car, insinuating that there is some kind of law against using a cell phone in a car when it's not hands-free. So I just wanted to have that clarified about the law in Illinois, and I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Okay, that would be you, Bill.
That would be me. Exactly. For clarification, there is no law that says you cannot use a cell phone. The law states that there can be no distraction in your vehicle. and distractions could be the use of cell phones, the use of eating in your car, reaching over to put a CD in anytime you take your eyes off the roadway, distractions of that sort. That's the law. Now, the law hasn't changed. All they did was amend that you can use now a hands-free as a way of communicating on a cell phone.
And that's not looked at as a distraction as much as a hands-held one, is that
exactly?
Okay.
Because both hands are on the wheel.
Okay.
Okay, we move back to Aurora again, line 4. Hello.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, in your classes teaching seniors, I hope you remind them if they have a degeneration in the eye not to drive at dusk or when it's dark.
That's correct.
I think people have to be reminded. And then the other thing I'd like you to discuss is taking right turns when possible, not to go across the road, making a right turn, and I'll hang up and let you discuss that as a way of taking the path of least resistance. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
All right. We're talking about not driving at night for seniors. Not only do we cover not driving at night, because I won't say that seniors should not drive at night. Let me make sure I clarify that. I'm saying that most people, the older that they get, the less that you're able to see at night. And I'm finding that at my age of 43, I am not able to see as clearly as when I was 23. And so that's just a natural process that your body has. But if we look at not only vision, but also those who are on medication, many people think that they can mix their medication. And what I mean by they think, they may have medication prescribed by the doctor, but many people will get a cold this winter, and so what they'll do is take cough syrup or something over the counter, which may interact with the medication that they're on, causing drowsiness, causing fatigue, causing some confusion. So we hit not only night driving, medication, but physical. There's a lot of things that I used to be able to do when I was younger I can't do now, and that's turning your head. So what can you do if you have some mobility problems? And that is to get bigger mirrors, to get those mirrors that will check your blind spots. Now, reference the right turn. By law in the state of Illinois, you have to turn into the nearest lane to your right. In other words, if you're turning right, you have to turn into the right lane. You can't turn into the passing lane. So the law is already there.
And the same thing with the left turn. When you're turning left, instead of going into, you go into the right lane, the far lane. And yeah.
Yes. Well, the thing with that law, and that's what the rules of the road state, and it states that you shall, whenever possible, to turn into the left lane or the nearest lane to you, but by law you have either lane, but it states you shall, whenever reasonable or possible, turn into, and it's a good idea, very good idea.
It works. Jason, let me just add a bit to the seniors debate, because we've had quite a situation up here with a debate actually in the daily papers and stuff as a result of quite a serious crash by an 84-year-old driver. My experience with seniors has been that to a large extent they kind of have a pretty good idea of things that are causing them problems, and in a lot of cases start to restrict themselves. They will automatically decide not to drive at night because they realize they're having trouble, with the eyes, as Bill was talking about. Many of them will not drive multi-lane highways because they feel uncomfortable with the speed and density of traffic. They have a tendency to reduce their trips and things like that. There's kind of in most cases, I think seniors are pretty cognizant of the fact that they need to reassess, how they use their cars. The frustrating part is that if you are a senior and you're getting up to that age where you have to evaluate whether you should be driving or not, there's nothing in place in most cities in North America that are going to allow you to to use, for example, public transit that is as convenient or is going to get you to the doctors or to, you know, to visit your kids or whatever it happens to be. And particularly if you live in a rural area, there are no provisions. So you have a tendency to really want to hang on to that driver's license, even though you maybe know in your own heart of hearts that this is not a good idea. So we don't have alternatives in place for seniors who have realized that maybe this process, you know, is beyond them, and they should start to look at an alternative, and when they aren't there.
Yep, thorny issue.
It is, yep. Very thorny issue. And I mean, I, to be honest with you, you know, and I know how Bill feels, or you, Jason, but when I get to be, you know, 70 or 80, I'm going to be a little resistant to somebody coming up and saying to me, now you're this specific age, you're going to have to take a test or a retest or something, and I mean, as Bill said, there's many drivers at 45 and 50 whose eyesight is not as good as it used to be, or their reflexes, or their flexibility. It's not an age issue. It really winds up being an issue of having basic skills in the first place, and also alternatives in place should you not be able to drive.
Let's move on now to call in town on line number one. Good afternoon.
Hi there.
Yes.
I just wanted to interject a couple things into the discussion here, and then I'll get off and just listen to the reply. First thing, I agree with a number of the things that you brought up as far as the lack of basic training skills. I think one of the problems with that is that in the United States, we look at a driver's license as a right and not a privilege. And I think if we had better mass transportation, better other options, that would be something that we could address. But since we don't, really, it's not something that you can do. You can't just say, you know, look, you don't actually drive well enough if you don't get a license. I mean, the ability to get a driver's license in this country is laughable. Going with that, I'd also like to make what amounts to pretty much a shameless plug for a driving program, but it's for motorcycles. It is the National Motorcycle Safety Foundation program, the flagship of which for the state of Illinois is here at the University of Illinois, www.mrc.uiuc.edu. And as an instructor for that program, one of the things that's taught there is a thing called SIPTE, and I don't know if you've ever heard of that or not, but it goes through the process of what's going on as you drive, so that you're not suddenly surprised by things. And you were talking earlier about playing the what-if game, and SIPTE is scan, identify, predict, decide, and execute, and it's just this what-if game that you play continuously while you drive. Looking 4 seconds ahead, looking 12 seconds ahead. It's one of the just foundational pieces of the curriculum. One of the other things that we do in the curriculum, and you've touched on this a number of times throughout the program so far, we discuss the concept of impairment when you're driving. And impairment, simply stated, is anything that keeps you from concentrating on the task at hand. And that can be, you know, talking on a cell phone. That can be having cold medicine in your system. That can be having just had an argument with your spouse or your girlfriend or whatever. That can be driving under the influence of alcohol. It's not like, I mean, the legal limit for alcohol in the state of Illinois is 0.08, but it's not like at 0.079 you're fine to drive, and suddenly at 0.08 something magical happens and now you can't drive. I mean, as soon as you take your first drink, you're impaired. In fact, you were impaired before you took that drink. You were thinking about things going on at work, or, you know, what you're going to do later tonight. I mean, there's always some degree of impairment. The question is how much, and how much can you manage, and how much are you willing to accept? And that's one of the concepts that we try to drive home.
Jason, can I just ask?
Sure, we're running a little close on time here. We only got about a minute or so, but
ask him about that SIPTE thing. It's scan, identify,
predict,
decide,
and execute.
I just have to say that the motorcycle training programs that have been instituted in North America have been phenomenally successful. They've reduced the crash and collision rate quite significantly, and I think really reinforces what Bill and I have been saying, that we you know, if you learn more about the process,
right,
chances
exactly
are that you can bail yourself out.
Exactly. And what's kind of frustrating for me is just that more people don't know about this because it's taught as part of the motorcycle curriculum, and so they somehow think that it's only related to motorcycles, when in fact it has... It's very, very immediately relevant to any kind of driving or any really kind of behavior that requires a lot of attention.
Exactly.
All right. I want to thank that caller for his call. And we are just about done with the program. So why don't we, real quick, why don't you tell us what resources there are if people want to become better drivers or learn more about this? We'll start with you, Bill.
For those that would like to get either a refresher course on defensive driving, or if they are needing some assistance, such as maybe have received a ticket, they can always contact the Illinois State Police Headquarters in District 10 at my office number. My office number is area code 217-265-0126. And I do presentations all the time. And for businesses and church organizations, they can also contact me. And I'd like to have at least 10 to 12 people in which we can have a good discussion, and that's what it is, a good discussion. That's just for a 6 or 8 hour course.
And Gary?
Well, I would say in most cases, unfortunately, the types of training that I do are not usually in the yellow pages. If you look up driving schools, you're going to get the schools that are going to do the licensing thing. But if you feel that you would like to learn more about it, I am sure that someone like Bill Emery would be able to find out if there are any advanced driving programs in the Illinois area. I'm sure there are. There's all kinds of ex-race drivers and rally drivers who teach skid control and advanced braking and things like that. And if you feel that you would like to learn more, first of all, it's a huge amount of fun, and secondly, you're going to feel a lot more comfortable behind the wheel once you've learned how to use your eyes and not get quite as frustrated with the whole process.
And I'll give you a plug here, Gary. Drivers.com. where
Absolutely.
Some of your articles can be found.
That is an international web page for anybody interested in the driving process. There are people from all over the world contribute to it. There's research. There's law enforcement information. There's training information. It's a very worthwhile web page. Just go in and have a look and noodle around. There's lots of good stuff.
Well, I want to thank you both for joining us today. We are out of time. Our guests today have been Gary Magwood. He is a driving educator and freelance writer. And Sergeant Bill Emery, a safety education officer with the Illinois State Police. Thank you both for joining us.
Jason, thank you. Thanks. And Bill, it was a pleasure.
You too, Gary. Good meeting you.
We'll talk to you.